The question is not, that's all I'm saying. The question is not, what is science and what is religion? The question is, what is true? And if you don't operate that way, I suggest you're in the wrong club.
Okay, my point was that based on Simpson, the argument, I mean, that we may all admit that's bad science. But that the other things don't follow from that. Okay.
It may or may not.
Right.
One more comment, and I'll leave it up to professional comment and response. I studied anthropology, human evolution, under the chairman of the Department of Anthropology at my university, the top anthropologist, Dr. Jansen, convinced evolutionist. And Todd says, and we went through these deductions. This is where we went. Since you brought in testimony, I'm therefore entitled to bring in testimony. This is what he said. I said, Dr. Jansen, in terms of pure science, pure epistemology, is the theory of total change organic non-athletic evolution, is it science or is it faith? His answer was, there isn't any question about its faith. It's an evolutionist. But you see, there's a level of certainty in textbooks, a level of certainty and confidence in the system, in the graduate textbooks in the college, that does not exist in the higher echelons of the discipline itself. For instance, I recently wrote a selective analysis for a textbook by Sauls from Princeton that was nominated for the approved textbook list in the state. High school anthropology text. And I was asked to write a selective analysis of it. I did so. By the way, in the book, I kicked off the list. I demonstrated that it was defective science. I documented it to the commission's satisfaction, apparently. I quoted not one creationist. And that book is not one bit different in content than the books that were accepted in its place. I just had to get hold of that one. Now, let's have done with this foolishness of religion versus science. That is, if we stay in those categories, we're not going to be talking about the real issues. Now, if you want to propagandize, you can stay in that area. But if you want to think, you can't do it. You simply can't do it. The time was where you could. You can't do it anymore. And I say that for the benefit of all, with college students and CFBC students. This is where it's going. This is where it's at. And if you think it isn't, you don't know what's going on.
There's something that's getting very confusing on this thinking. And that is sometimes giving us a bit of science, and then we just call it a faith. Now, it seems to me that if science is, as you say, an attitude, that a method, one that creates hypotheses and then seeks deductions to validation, then there's nothing scientific about creationism.
Well, definitely not. It's not science.
Creationism, then, is not science.
Neither is evolution.
And therefore, you could take the immediate consequence of that and say, therefore, it should not be taught in classrooms in science. It should be taught in religion or in philosophy or in a general course in the world, various worldviews, which and the implications of creationism, which you spelled out very eloquently about a sense of responsibility and stewardship for the creation and all that. That should be where it would be taught rather than in terms of science. Now, I think we should also question whether your dissertation guide was really correct in saying evolution through the faith. I know that's kind of shorthand, but it certainly does not appear to have the characteristics of what faith is. To be sure, a hypothesis, but more than a hypothesis, it is a way of explaining that clarifies millions of details while it has a number of questionable characteristics, and there are differences between different kinds of evolutionists, still, it seems to be the best working hypothesis by which we can methodologically approach this whole view of the universe. That seems to be a science that for a while, was very clear what you felt about a science. In that sense, is scientific creationism then, if it isn't a science, then why should it be taught in the science?
It is. It is not, when I say creation is not a science, that means it is not in a pure sense. But as new because we're talking about a process active in the past. It is not observable, repeatable, probably, but it is not falsifiable. You can't see it. It's not a sign. You can't see it. Now, by the way, the experts in here, I'm not talking. Now, what I mean, but it is just as scientific as evolution, because you set your hypothetical deductive system up. If creation happened, I should expect to find this.
But what would make you change it? What would make the scientific creationist make a move?
Okay, what it really is there's too many X's over here. For instance, you see, what's happened since the 19th century? The 19th century revival of a Greek Christian, the Greek view of origins, here at 5th and 6th century, we see it for. And,
What would move a scientific creationist to deny his hypothesis, his view?
Scientific creationist?
Yeah. If there is such a thing as a scientific
the area in which did you move it away? There is an area, for instance, I'm representing those who are crossing over. They point out that it has failed to predict what was expected in the fossil record. It failed to predict that. Now, what has happened is that the neo-Darwinism, which speaks in terms of natural selection, in terms of differential reproduction, as opposed to differential mortality, is simply, that is a theory which is no more defensive than its predecessor. It simply is demanded by the fossil record. Well, it's born of necessity. If we can observe the neo-Darwinian model, nothing's happened. Anybody has seen it. Nothing's happened in the laboratory that's caused that. But you see, you cross over, you've got to mold and the theory is a very plastic theory. It's not falsifiable. I found this in anthropology. I followed the rules set by the theory of evolution instead of human evolution. There was no way in the world, if I stayed in them, that it could not be true.
I think that
would help me in the area of genetics and the area of spontaneous growth. For instance, I defy anybody to name one scientific law, not a generalization, but a law that supports fertile chance organic evolution. Name one.
Well, here I'm saying that this is a very strong. So I'd like to finish with a line of thought and then all of that. But it seems to me that what you're pursuing there is a very helpful and useful analysis of the weaknesses of evolutionary doctrine. And that is a very useful scientific function. But my question wasn't that. You see, by attacking another position, one does not necessarily cite evidence for one's own. What kind of evidence, I was asking, would cause a scientific creationist to give up his hypothesis and accept another? For example, it would seem to me that the presence of millions of documented species that are documented from fossil records on Noah's Ark would be totally impossible. And I certainly could not imagine how one could honestly look at all of the variation of botanical and biological life and imagine it's all on this little boat floating around in a primary flood. But that evidence apparently, and I would take evidence, but That evidence would not count against the scientific creation.
Now, that's a separate question. The flood is a separate question from creation in the first place. We're talking about credibility. You read your question of credibility in the historical record. Not question, just not creation. Do you want to go that route?
So you're saying that the idea of the flood is not necessary to a creationist. A creationist.
No, not the idea of a universal flood. No. That's a separate question.
That's a separate question. Then what would be the evidence that would persuade a scientific creationist that
it's not the idea? That's an excellent question. I would say such things as if you could show a thermodynamic tendency toward it. If, for instance, you could demonstrate that life has the capacity to create and organize itself up there. Matter of fact, that's the other way.
Fridtjof Gene, Nobel Prize, in Belgium, 1968. You just cited evidence, though, that would, in a sense, support evolution, and said it wasn't there. And for still looking, first of all, I guess I'm not clear in my mind as to what the creation of the hypothesis is. Some creations, I know, would include the flood. Let me give you another possible example here, and that is that would one, as a creationist, be concerned about the number of species, according to the fossil record, that are no longer present, that are extinct? And would that raise some question in a creationist mind as to God's purposes? In allowing at least what some scientists estimate, and I don't know whether this is accurate, but some scientists estimate 99% of all the species that ever existed are no longer with us.
If
something like that, you see, then one would wonder, how does that in a sense square with an understanding of an intelligent, purposive, creative God? It certainly would square with the notion of random variation in natural selection. You understand that kind of a general fact, you see, from an evolutionary point of view. But I just use this as an illustration, and I think the point comes out in the creationist literature, and I think it came out in the Arkansas trial, although I only read some of the trials, is that there's just no positive hypothesis and supporting evidence advanced by the creationists. It was always an attack on the weaknesses of evolutionary theory, which most evolutionary scientists would recognize. So I think one can do a great service to any creationist position by, in a sense, using what we suggested here, a kind of proper notion of falsifiability. What is the creationist hypothesis, and what would then be the evidence that would come against it?
Well, I don't know there are some, but the meaning, those are really the five, those creationists that I would. Do not suggest the creation of the kind that's present in the Bible are species. And there aren't any kinds of animals compared to species. And of course, we're not sure what species the matter of fact, the wholesale death of man and animals fits very well with the biblical account. Death came in and the world became a global cemetery. That's basically the whole problem with that biblical creation. If he found transitional forms, I think that would seriously damage his position. But they aren't there. And that, because they're not there, neo-Darwinism had to replace classic Darwinism to explain why the transitional fossils are not there. That's the general movement of. Because you see, the creationist has no trouble with microevolution. It's this quantum leap of logic to macroevolution. It's the talk which simply says, many are simply saying, we cannot make that jump. Why? Because the evidence is not there. That is, if you could show, for instance, evidence that it has happened, and evidence in the way things work that kind of thing normally happens, then I think evidence would have to abandon its position, the creation would have to abandon its position. As a matter of fact, that's not true. It's not true. For instance, I'm simply pointing out that life is not happening, and it's not organizing itself upward. The evidence isn't there, and I have a documentation. I could cite a lot of evolution at this point, we take all nine of this.
I'm not sure that the point about the difference in these positions is out there. There's a fallacy of logic that some people would call false dichotomous questions, in which you act as though the only possible answers to a question are A or B, when in fact there's a whole alphabet of answers.
You got any more?
And you're contrasting classical Darwinian theory and a cluster of creationist views as though these are logical correlates of each other, and if you move from one, you must move to the other. It's clearly not the case. To falsify a Darwinian theory, especially in its classical form, is not necessarily to adopt any hypothesis of creationism. So, for instance, in this last question that was asked, if transitional forms were found, that might, you gave up too easily, that might support a Darwinian view, but it wouldn't in any way relate to creationist view, because creationism trucks in a whole set of other hypotheses to account for phenomena that aren't present. They aren't just the logical opposites of the ones that are present in Darwinian. So we're really dealing with a whole alphabet of theories. And to reject Darwinism is not solution to creationism, vice versa. I think what you would need is some evidence for or against the particular letter that you're supporting, which is creationism. And evidence for or against Darwinism doesn't count in a sense.
Well, for instance, if I may give an example, for instance, if you go from one three-legged creature to another three-legged creature, presumably the reason would be that the three-legged creature predicts something that this person cannot predict. And once it's predicted it, it goes out and tests it and finds that it's true, as opposed to simply finding problems with the person. So one way of looking at this would be considered purely as a theory and not in light of what has gone wrong with the first theory. Let this theory be predict, what has it predicted, and then you have gone to the lab and found that it has worked out.
Or to the field. I'll give you a fair example. The sudden appearance of highly diversified, complex, fully evolved forms of Henry Rock without predecessors.
How is that predicted by creation?
What's sudden creation conduct? Now, you're right. What we've done, I've generalized. And there are many, it's much more complicated. I said that going in. I accept creationism, but I have not fully defined all the aspects of my view. I think there's the evidence, of course, still out on me, in particular. What I'm saying is I'm a creationist because as I have studied this as science, I have found that the weight of probability is over here in creationism. Now, that doesn't mean, again, that I can answer all the questions. I think one of the answers over here. Now, it's true. The problem is if you deal with sort of fiat creation, no matter what version you have, and there are many versions, and you deal with the neo-Darwinian model, there aren't very many more men in the room. There isn't too many more, but
among the others in the room is Aristotle, who believed in spontaneous generation, but certainly didn't believe in the sort of creationism that you're talking about.
Well, I don't know anybody
close to
that as a...
Well,
Aristotle, Teilhard de Chardin, and that whole process group. But
I'd like to check you on. You obviously don't want, not your own point. Do you not want evolution taught in schools and creation to talk instead, or talk along side by side?
That's actually the question.
Or, also, if you want to throw out evolution, including creationism, what kind of creationism do you advocate? The Bible? What about the Muslims? They have their Quran. They have their own view of how life is created. About the Taoists? About the Hindus? The Buddhists? What form of creationism are we going to adopt and teach?
That's an excellent question. First of all, ideally, this is what happened. Well, I would recommend that neither of you thought. Should we teach science as it functions? You know, just stay away from the question of origins. That is going to happen. Since I don't think it's going to happen, the next mile, my second is to teach both, but then it's changing to your third question, it is not necessary to teach Genesis, to teach creationism. As a matter of fact, creation science fellowship, we have a whole bibliography of texts which have been written to simply demonstrate, to simply compare the two models, allow the students to decide for themselves, look at the line that they mentioned. And the Arkansas decision, the judge was wrong about that. He was simply stating his opinion that if you teach creationism, then you have to teach Genesis. That is not true. The question, you see, idea, and here's how it should go. The question is, does the evidence on the basis of credibility based upon on comparative probability, does it support the idea that things gradually evolve into themselves? If it doesn't, then you have to say whether they were created or some other thing, I don't know where you go with it, but some version of that, either one. But the question of who did it, that's an issue that does not have to enter in, and a whole genre of textbooks have been prepared and have been used, which is a line right there, and it can be drawn.
Let me say this. I have infiltrated a number of creationist organizations. Interestingly enough, one of them that I wrote for some information in Minneapolis sent me their material in a cramped paper bag. And I thought, with my name handwritten in the front, I thought, gee, that's kind of strange. I'm getting this creationist literature in a plain brown wrapper, you know, like you might get pornography through the mail. And then I thought, well, maybe intellectual pornography is the most offensive kind. But that is the way I got some of it. But you would be surprised at the sophistication of the material for the creation that's available. Beautiful textbooks, unless you read some of the stuff in them, really are handsome, they're well illustrated. Lots of material, lots of audio video material. Some of the audio video material is nice because it shows creationist stuff and full color and the evolutionary concepts of black and white. But besides that, there's a lot of material available. One of the things that I think is sort of amusing is something that Carl Sagan had to say, in saying that let's look at this particular idea. That God made man in his image. Who gave man the most reasoning power of all of the animals that he placed on the earth? He gave man prefrontal lobes, precognitive thinking, and reasoning, whatever. And then God, of course, made for the creation everything on the earth, placed everything where it is, and accounts for every rock and riddle, every fossil remains, every bit of physical evidence exists in all the universe. And so all these people that are made in God's image, man, they look at all this evidence that's out of the world, and what conclusion do most of them come to? They come to the evolutionary ideas. And so Sagan says, in a sort of humorous way, he says, could it be that God has violated that commandment that says, thou shalt not bear false witness? God put that stuff there, maybe God himself in making all of it, and all that evidence out there for us to look at. Born false words. That was a policy of guns. One thing he said when he received the humans in the real world. The thing about teaching creationism and mandating creationism of any flavor alongside of evolution being taught in the school. In the Arkansas case, it did not say that both of them had to be taught. It said if evolution is taught, then creationism must be taught. And the situation that puts the teacher in is the teacher, if he or she is conscientious and knows all of them are, is likely not to teach either concept. And that is likely to produce, if it lasted long enough in the public schools, a generation of students who don't appreciate science and also a lot of them don't appreciate the religion. And neither objective is to be desired. Either a lack of appreciation of religion or a lack of appreciation of science. And that's one of the results that have come ahead of the Arkansas case from the Hill.
I'd like to switch the discussion a little bit because I recognize that we've really got two major issues here. One is the humanist evangelical kind of thing going on, and the other is the creationist evolutionist kind of thing going on. I think all of you are recognizing those are separate issues. Always discussing, but Dr. Tanger, you outlined an interesting set of attitudes that you thought yourself as being a creationist, and in your concluding presentation. And as you were doing that, you worked with the individual, Scott Michaelis was exactly, but the thing that struck me is it sounded really like you were a Christian humanist in expressing those attitudes. Because some of those things that you were expressing, optimism, the worth of the individual, recognizing the variety of individuals and individual businesses and so on, are the kinds of things that at least I've heard some humanists also talk about. Obviously not from your particular point of view, I wonder if you could just state those again, and I'd kind of like to hear Dr. Wilson respond and see, raise this whole question of what are the more or less not so much the scientific results of creationism, now we're talking about creation and humanism, but what are the results for human living in the way we regard human beings and so on? I think I'd like to repeat those, and then ask Dr. Wilson, well, aren't those, in a sense, humanist attitudes that he might conceive, and how would he then support the same attitudes, or could he support the same attitudes?
Well, okay, I think shortcut, if it doesn't work, I don't care most of anything. That you see, I would think that in general terms, there would be no difference in the attitudes. If you take creationism and all the way home in humanism, as I understand all the absolutely. But the difference is not the attitude, the difference is your motive for doing it. Whereas I would say that those are compulsory, matter of morals. In an absolute sense, I think the Christian humanists would say they're a matter of taste or expediency or the result of sociological law, statistics, it works best, but that they're subject to change. I would say that they're not that they are absolute, not for them. But I would say that's probably that.
Seems to me we've drifted pretty far away from the theme of the evening as it was presented to us, fundamentalism versus humanism, and that fundamentalism hasn't really been defined. Seems to me that fundamentalism sticks to the idea that the Bible is the revealed word of God, truth from cover to cover, and that takes us right back to the Eugenic Prime and we were having a rerun of the taking Tennessee fire in this major emphasis now. And there is this difference in approach to truth on the part of our thinkers. Simpson, you spoke of it as a Gale. Well, that's not George Gale, Simpson. It was a good evolution. We had many of them. This has not been the primary emphasis in humanism. The emphasis in humanism has been on survival here on the planet. Humanist Manifesto 2, which I was co-editor, was an attempt at a document that was thought away in the direction of some survival in a world threatened with nuclear destruction, in a world threatened with famine over large areas of it, and in a world with overpopulation. We are interested in such questions. And they're not our question alone, they are what humanity at large is threatened with. Now the present administration came in with an active political program on the part of the Jerry Falwells, Robertson, Tim LaHaye, and other of these moral people. And you see human values going down the drain. You see human programs subordinated to a program that probably will make a great many millionaires rich by way poor, unmonitored, vast sum, not entirely unmonitored, but sums in the Pentagon. And I think our concern as humanists today will be in these social issues that are suffering directly by the withdrawal of funding from anything from school lunches to aid to dependent children and so forth, to CETA and training people for employment, with a now approaching 10% unemployment, And we hope it never gets back to the 25% unemployment that I went through in my Chicago days during the Depression. But those are the important issues to the humanists today. How are we going to survive here on the planet? This morning's mail, I had 9 appeals for money, 9 different organizations, any one of which, if I were a man of wealth, I'd want to support.